This is music from Monty Alexander when he was just a teenager. Welcome to The Checkout, a radio show and podcast from WBGO. I'm Josh Jackson. Before Monty Alexander came to America, he was a 16-year-old already making hits in his home country. The Jamaican pianist tells his incredible story. Quebecois composer Vincent Rael revels in soundtracks to movies by Hitchcock, films like The Exorcist. The pianist reveals his own cinematic-like project, Image du Lendemain. But first, a contemplative duo with Paris's Baptiste Trottignon and saxophonist Mark Turner. Trottignon speaks to WBGO's Simon Rettner about their recording, Dusk is a Quiet Place. That's up next on this special 2014 Montreal Jazz Fest edition of The Checkout. Thanks for checking in.
Baptiste Trottignon, thank you for joining us on The Checkout
from
WBGO at the Montreal Jazz Festival. Dusk is a Quiet Place is the recording with Mark Turner and a duo project. Play some Bach, a tribute to Stevie Wonder, and some original works by both of you.
Well, it's mainly some original tunes. Mark and I share the responsibility of the musical intentions, you know. So that's very exciting because he's a real master, and it's super. His way of playing is at the same time super sophisticated, very rich in the language, and very simple and poetic and fluid. So there are the both aspects, you know, the brain and the heart.
Well, let's listen to a particularly beautiful piece that you wrote called Only One.
Thank you.
by Baptiste Trottignon from Paris with Mark Turner. What's kind of magical about this recording, I have to say, is there are almost moments. You have to wait until the magic happens.
Well, it's basically a ballad album. Like the title says, Dusk is a Quiet Place. It means something nocturnal. You know, it's not the funky, heavy rock stuff. You know, it's more about intimacy. And this vibe was also a choice because that's live tracks. We recorded that during a tour. I mean, it's not presented like a live album, but it's coming from concerts, from live situations.
A word that came to mind when I was listening to this recording very early in the morning was contemplative.
Perfect. I like it. It's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's cool to contemplate life. I mean, we don't have time anymore. We're always running, rushing. I mean, I guess, I mean, we just know each other for 10 minutes, but I'm sure you do the same. So, but so sometimes it's important to do unuseful things, you know, because everything now has to be useful. So it's kind of cool to do some things that have no goal sometimes. And this is what contemplation is about also, you know. It's just to accept things and not be in the action sometimes. It's useful. It's useful to be unuseful.
Baptiste Trottignon joins us on the checkout. Dusk is a Quiet Place is the recording. You called Mark Turner a warrior of beauty. What battles?
Yeah, there was a description on my album Share a few years ago where he was invited to play with Tom Harrell. And I called them, Tom and Mark, with that adjective, warriors of beauty. Well, yeah, I think it speaks from itself, warriors of beauty, because it's like searching, as you can search in a battle with yourself, you know, searching the beauty in yourself, in the world, etc., blah, blah, blah.
Do you think artists are soldiers?
In a way, yes, because it's kind of an act of resistance to be an artist nowadays, you know? That's why, for example, I like the idea that artists are not engaged politically, you know, just because it's already to be engaged, you know, in defending a certain way of life, being an artist, whatever it's musician or other kind of arts. Of course, it's not especially jazz musician. You know, it's just.
And what do you think you're defending, Baptiste Trottignon?
Just a certain kind of freedom. You know, everything now is getting normalized with internet and everything. Everybody wants to be like everybody. You know,
the homogenization of culture.
Yeah, I think that's this word. I'm not sure, but I understand. But I think that's it. Yeah. it's one way, possible way of making things better in the world, more than politics, then cannot do nothing anymore. They're all like that, you know, like, how to say, you know. But I think artists can bring something that gives energy to people, you know, and so it's a nice, it's a chance to be able to do that thing, even if it's not easy, I mean, because... It's not like, oh, it's cool, we do what we want, we make some gigs, it's nice. No, it's a lot of more concrete fights also as a warrior, you know, to still be there year after year, etc. You have to always be vigilant and everything. But yeah, I like the idea that we defend something else than this kind of uniform thing that everybody has to defend now, more or less, you know, like. But it's strange because it means being different. Every artist has to find his own identity, so it's a challenge.
Baptiste Trottignon joins us on the checkout. Dusk is a Quiet Place is the recording with Mark Turner. And why don't you talk about, how do you say that Brazilian?
Odoborogodo? No, I'm not.
That's very good.
I don't speak Portuguese, so I'm sorry. I don't have the accent probably, but Odoborogodo, which is the name of a famous samba club in Sao Paulo.
Yeah, let's listen to whatever.
Odoborogodo.
Yeah, just say, let's listen to that.
Or let's listen to it, yeah. Odoborogodo.
Thank you.
music from pianist Baptiste Trottignon and saxophonist Mark Turner. Dusk is a quiet place. Coming up next, from Jamaica to America, the remarkable life story of pianist Monty Alexander with WBGO's Gary Walker on this 2014 Montreal Jazz Festival edition of The Checkout.
Monty Alexander with us.
Man, I'm happy to be with you, Gary.
As is the case with a lot of musicians who are really in touch, it's one's life that really informs one's music. And for you, it was just that, growing up in Kingston, Jamaica.
You said it. And for me, this music gift that we get, and, you know, is a life of just thrills and challenges and excitement. You're traveling the world and you're meeting people, and as you're doing it, you're putting that into your heart, and you're putting it out on your musical instrument, and you're connecting to people, and it's a never-ending opportunity to communicate with the world, and it doesn't stop. And I have been doing it from I was a four-year-old little kid banging on the piano in the house.
And a few lessons, but basically self-taught.
That's right. Well, I was playing and making melodies and playing little rhythms and already entertaining the family and the neighbors. And then one day my mother said, you got to take some piano lessons. And that's the last thing I wanted to hear, because I knew that somebody's going to start leaning over me saying, don't do that. And by that time, I was already on my way to, you know, just having a good time. And I did have some piano lessons for about 4 years off and on, primary years, but I was the worst student, because I was instead of going and practicing the little figures on the piano, which by the way were foundation, I'd be trying to play boogie woogie.
Where did you hear that boogie-woogie music?
I think on the radio in Jamaica, because Jamaicans love American popular music, and the rhythm and blues was the cornerstone of everybody to dance on the weekend after a hard day's working. We're going to the dance. And that was the beginning of the sound systems, what we call the sound systems in Jamaica. But I would hear Louis Jordan music, and we heard Bill Doggett, and we hear Fats Domino, all the popular music. But I heard country and western, Eddie Arnold and Tennessee Ernie Ford and Patti Page, all the popular artists. So I heard music all day long. And the first thing that any kid can do, if you have it in your being, is to sit there and just play on the black keys. You can play boogie woogie. So I was developing an ear, we call it, you know. So I never really followed through with school music, you know, to learn how to read that well, because I just didn't take to it, because it was something too stressful for me. The side of my brain wasn't working. So I just kept making up tunes, and one day I'm playing in a little band, and next day, you know, you're with the older guys, and they're saying, yeah, man, come on, play the piano. I was already had a school band. We made a couple of recordings. It was called Monty and the Cyclones. And I wanted to say Monty and the Hurricanes, but there was a rock and roll band by that name, the Hurricanes, you know, Hurricane. And I called it Monty and the Cyclones. I had a couple of hits on the radio. I was about 14 years old. By that time, I was already going to all the local shows to see the popular local guys singing the calypso songs. I'd had an accordion. I had to go sit in with all these calypso bands playing the type of songs Harry Belafonte.
Everything I've got, I love you. Would you say that you'll be mine?
But I was already smitten by American music. I didn't even know whether it was jazz or not. I just loved the spirit of the thing.
Yeah.
And one day, I saw Louis Armstrong. He came to Kingston, Jamaica, and my father knew the promoter, and I went to see my hero. Next day, my dad got me a trumpet, and I wanted to play the trumpet, and I tried. I ended up being the bugler at the football matches to rally the team, you know?
Yeah.
But Pops Satchmo was my hero, and Trummy Young, and Billy Kyle, and those guys. I mean, so, and then my other hero was Nat Cole, because my mother and father used to play the love songs, dancing in the house to Answer Me, Oh My Love, all these songs, man, got into my spirit. And I started hearing American songs. So my whole diet of music was just never ending. It was everything. I love cowboy music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Listen to Hurricane Come and Gone and see if you can find the quote, "It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing." Monty Alexander.
Thank you.
I don't know how many people, there aren't many of them in the world, that can quote "It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing" and "Slipping Into Darkness" all in the same tune.
You gotta be crazy. little crazy.
That's from the Harlem Kingston Express, Volume 2, The River Rolls On, and we are glad it does. Monty Alexander. Now, you always wanted to call your band the Hurricanes. Well, he had to call them the Cyclones, but he wrote a tune called "Hurricane Come and Gone, Moonlight City."
Man, oh man. The hurricane, as you all know, we all know, especially after the last couple of years, is the most threatening thing when that time of year comes around in the Caribbean, you know? So everybody get ready. So you pray that the roof is going to stay on. And I remember as a kid, one of those big bad ones came to Jamaica. And 1953, something like that. And the whole neighborhood, it just so happened that the house that I lived in, the construction must have been a little better because the roof stayed on, whereas all the other houses down the road, the roof came off. And I mean, not because they were having fun.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Because the hurricane took the roofs away and people were really devastated. And my house, living room, became the hangout center. All the people from down the street came up to the house, and the rum and the whiskey came out of the cabinet, man. Everybody had one heck of a party. In fact, not too far from where we live was the then chief minister of Jamaica, Sir Alexander Bustamante was his name. And he ended up in the living room with his fiancée at the time, and laughing and just, you know, waiting out that hurricane. So that stuck with me all through the years. And I created this little piece, call it "Hurricane Come and Gone." I mean, it's coming. Look out.
And you got some great musicians on this record with you. We heard Yotam, who I first heard in Jimmy Heath's big band, Yotam Silverstein.
That's right.
On the guitar. Ooh.
Well, he can play, and he's a soulful guy.
So you talked about the hurricane in the early mid-50s, and just a few years later than that, in 1961, you would come to America and end up in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, I was just a kid roaming the streets of Miami and Miami Beach, you know, because you come to America, and you just got to be in this land that is where your, you know, the life and the opportunity, when you're seeing the movies, those big structures, buildings, and those buildings where Superman flies out the window. I said, I want to see that building where Superman fly out the window, you know? Not only that, that's where my heroes on the movie screen come from. That's where the cowboys are from there. I got to go. So we came. There I was on Miami Beach, roaming the streets, you know, and I heard music. And some guys were jamming in a nightclub, and I was underage. I was 17. They let me in and said, "Hey, man, come on, let's, you know." I said, "Can I sit in?" And I'd sit in, and next thing you know, we smoke from the bandstand. We rocking, we swinging, we having a ball. And that became a very wonderful outlet for me. And then one night, a booking agent was in the club, and he said, "Hey, kid, hey, you play all right on that piano." I said, "I can get you some jobs around here in Miami, Florida." I said, "Me, really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, because I knew what to do by that time. I was confident. I sat at the piano like I owned that thing, you know? And I knew all the old songs. I knew I could play Margie, well, I'm always sitting. I knew all these songs, man. I could sit there and entertain the people. And sure enough, I started playing around these bars, clubs, where frequently the clientele included some heavy-duty tough guys, if you know what I mean. And the ladies of the night were there as well. And one night, I was playing in a place called Le Bee on the 79th Street Causeway, and in walked Frank Sinatra. Mr. Sinatra with his buddy Jilly Rizzo. And they came in there to see an entertainer who's trying to imitate Sinatra. This guy was named Duke Hazlitt. He wanted to sing Frank and act. And Sinatra came in to see him. I guess he must have had an attack for a minute there, because there was the chief, the chairman was there. And one of the people in the party saw me playing in this other room, an annexed room with a little trio. They said, "Hey, this kid is all right. And they invited me to come to New York. That's how I got to New York.
And you're still a teenager when this is going.
I was 18.
Now, during your stint at Gilly's, is that where people like Basie would come to see you play?
Absolutely. Bags came in there and played with all these great guys, and Al Hearwood and Mickey Rocha and Ray Mosco was another guy that played there. Peck Morrison on the bass. So I got all these musicians, and I'm playing at the piano bar for these, some of them were hustlers, and the hookers, as we call them, right? And Sinatra, man, when Frank came to town, the place was buzzing with excitement. It was just a little, about 60, 70 people could fit in there. And Gilly knew everybody. Everybody loved Gilly Rizzo. And it could be Basie in the back room hanging out with Sinatra. Sammy Davis might come walking in. The comedians from the Borscht Belt, Alan King, Jack Carter, Jackie Leonard, all these guys. And one night, Judy Garland is at the bar, sitting there, had a few too many, perhaps. And I'm playing, I'm fitting in, I'm playing, and I'm, checking out the scene and getting ready for big trouble. One night, Miles comes walking in. Miles hears me playing the piano, and he comes over to me and says, "Where you learn to play that stuff?" I said, I don't know, I just listen to the records a lot. He said, "Come on by the house." He gives me his phone number, and I start going to hang out with Miles Davis at his house. He loved boxing, and I love boxing. So I started hanging out with Miles.
Monty Alexander. What does sleeky mean?
It's just a word I made up.
Yeah?
Yeah, because the groove, the feeling and the rhythm is like you're just sleekily moving to the beat. You know, it's just you don't even jump around to that one. You just ease in, ease out. That's what it is.
You just ease in. The feel for your music gives enough space for the listener to move in. Right?
I never thought of it that way.
It's not so jam-packed with stuff, but yet it is.
One of the things I love when I make the music and play the music is I want it hot I like when the music is hot, it's got excitement and it feels good. But I also love the fact that you can just be very, very cool about it. And there's a place between that hot and that cool that's the end result, where you're feeling excited, you're feeling good, but you're also sitting back to just absorb the moment.
By Monty Alexander, from his Motema release, Harlem Kingston Express, Volume 2, The River Rolls On. In a minute, an introduction to the Quebecois composer Vincent Reyel with WBGO Simon Rentner. They're on the scene at the 2014 Montreal Jazz Festival. This is The Checkout. I'm Josh Jackson.
Vincent Reyel, thank you for joining us on The Checkout.
Yes, nice to be here.
He has a record called Image of the Future, or Image du Lendemain.
That's it.
Very interesting recording here. I almost feel like I should be watching a movie when I'm listening to this music.
Yeah. It's I'm a big fan of symphonic poems, like impressionist music, like Maurice Ravel, Claude Debussy, beginning of the 20th century music, French composers. And I actually did a few soundtracks too for a few movies and a TV series. I'm also a big Hitchcock fan, so sometimes I go through like scenes from Vertigo and Herbie Hancock feel and Medeski Martin and Wood, and I kind of mix all, it's all my head that's on that recording.
Yeah, and actually that's exactly what I thought when I heard the first piece on your record. It's like, this could be a perfect theme for a television show.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. joins us on the checkout at the Montreal Jazz Festival 2014. He has a recording called Image du Lendemain, Image of Tomorrow, Image of the Future. A lot of the tunes on here, Vincent, sound very menacing, kind of like they were made or composed for a Alfred Hitchcock film, yeah. Like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Like a Strange Dream, for
yeah.
instance.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of those dark movies like Hitchcock or Kubrick. And I'm also a big fan of progressive rock music. The way I would resume it is you mix some Béla Bartók or Stravinsky with some Mahavishnu Orchestra. And I'm very, very humble. I'm not saying that I write like these masters, you know?
Right.
But it's just like music that I've listened to. There's kind of anxiety in the music, which is represent my way sometimes of living in a way, like in my head, what's happening. But for me, it's total happiness. It's not like a bad feeling, you know? I remember hearing like when you check out the Exorcist at the end, there's a quartet, string quartet piece, and it's made to scare you, actually. But not me. It doesn't scare me. That makes me happy, you know. Like, so there's a tension in these songs, which actually calmed me.
It seems like you're particularly attuned to listening to soundtracks while you're watching some of your favorite films.
Yeah, I'm a big film fan, you know.
So take us through the mind of Vincent Rael watching a film. Yeah. What are some films that you've seen recently that have very strong music passages?
Well, The Master, obviously.
With
The Master.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
He's playing a character loosely based off of the author of Dianetics.
Yeah, exactly.
This guy, L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, exactly. Also, There Will Be Blood.
Johnny Greenwood.
Yeah, well, The Master is the same. It's Johnny Greenwood, too.
Okay.
So, but in There Will Be Blood, you see, like, there's, like, fuel, like, exploding everywhere, and you hear these dissonant strings, like, in tremolo.
Well, Vincent Rael, given the fact that you are a fan of movies and the cinema,
yeah.
What is the film that would be behind this record? What's the plot line?
Oh, okay. You see, I probably wrote it when I was breaking up with my ex-wife, so maybe it helped. Sorry about that. But I recorded like 20 songs in studio for that album. I kept only 10. I recorded 22. So I guess it's in the final process of choosing which songs would be good for the album that I realized that this was all a big symphonic poem in a way, you know?
Well, I hear like definitely there's like a detective, a murder perhaps, a mystery.
Well, that's your conception.
And of course a breakup. Just kidding.
Yeah, why not? Always a good breakup. That's life.
All right. Well, let's listen to this marriage of strings and organ.
Revelations of the Namur. Namur is like a non-wall. It's like it's something like abstract, something that doesn't exist. There's a wall, but there's also there's a non-wall. So it's kind of a it's, it's a dark hole, man. It's the revelations from nowhere.
Révélation du Nom Mur by Vincent Rael on piano and organ from his album Images du Lendemain. Our producer Simon Rentner spoke to the composer from Quebec for this special 2014 Montreal Jazz Festival edition of The Checkout. You can find the complete artist lineup at montrealjazzfest.com. Voila! The Checkout is a podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes. We are online at checkoutjazz.org. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at checkoutjazz. Our producer is Simon Rentner. He's at Simon Rentner. Special thanks to Vincent Lefebvre and all the folks at the Montreal Jazz Festival. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Josh Jackson. Thanks for listening.